ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Is it correct that today is the disappearance day of Vasudev? No, what's his name? Vasudev Ghosh. Is that correct? Is it on the board? We used to have a board here with all the events on. Does anyone know? It is written there. So today is... Every day in the month of Kartik is the most auspicious occasion. And especially at this period of Kartik, where we have the Diwali festival with the pastime of Damodar Leela, and yesterday Govardhana Puja, and in 2 days' time Srila Prabhupada's disappearance day. So many other events, the appearance of Radha Kund, and so many wonderful events to help us to focus our attention on the lotus feet of Krishna. The subject matter of today's verse, following on from the class of His Holiness Indradyumna Maharaj a few days ago, is on a similar topic, that, let's say, that three-letter word, we will not mention it now. It will come up later. But to deal with that is practically the crux of our whole life. It's practically the pivot of our going one way or the other. So we'll try to, let's say, churn, if that's the right word, churn the topic a little bit today with the hope that we'll direct or become directed in a more favorable way. So one of the ways of, let's say, dealing with this primary way, Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes in Bhakti Alok that by hearing about great devotees, one can develop courage, confidence, determination, enthusiasm, and satisfaction. Every one of us is Anandamaya Vyasat in a sense that we are also searching for pleasure. We're all searching for pleasure. And unless we get pleasure, param drishtva navartate, unless we get the pleasure of spiritual pleasure, the tendency is that we will be attracted to the lower pleasures, the attractions to the material world. And we all know, vishayo chatiya kabe, shudahabe man, if we want to enter into Vrindavan, then we have to become free of these attachments, these attractions, these desires for particularly that three-letter word, which will keep you in suspense if you don't know what it means. You'll find out soon. So today is the disappearance day, Tirubhav, of one of those unlimited great devotees who come into this world to bless us with our association, to purify us, and to help to enliven us with our instructions. So Vasudev Ghosh, of course, I'll say a couple of words, have any literature. One, three brothers, famous brothers, Madhava Ghosh, Govinda Ghosh and Vasudev Ghosh. They were very famous. They descended from Bangladesh, some say in the area of Shillet, and whatever, but they came from that part of the world and they moved to Navadvipa, and they were very involved in Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. They were three of the leading Kirtaniyas. They composed, or at least Vasudev Dutta composed, excuse me, Vasudev Ghosh compose many wonderful kirtan, bhajans, glorifying Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Jagannath, and others. Very famous for their kirtans. Vasudeva Ghosh is said to be, sometimes it's said he's different. He's one of the associates of the Lord. Sometimes it's said he's Sudevi. It's actually described that he is none other than Sudevi. And Govinda Ghosh, his brother, is Rangadevi, I think. Twin sister of Sudevi. So they are Sakis, and sometimes it's described he's one of the other assistants of the Sakis, but he's certainly one of the most confidential associates of Srimati Radharani. They're not just ordinary sadhakas, they are Nitya Siddhas. They're coming from the Lord's in Sroop, Sroop Shakti, very special devotees. So especially to become empowered in Kirtan, we can remember Vasudeva Ghosh. He was personification of Kirtan Ras, practically. They would lead Kirtan, play Madungas, especially the Rathyatras in Jagannath Puri. When Lord Chaitanya left the world, Vasudeva Ghosh was so devastated, he started to dig his own samadhi and sat in his samadhi waiting to die. And then Lord Chaitanya appeared to him in a vision and told him, "Get out." He picked him up, brought him out. But he wanted to sit there till he stopped breathing. He couldn't bear the separation of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So these great personalities give us a little hope, chance to be delivered. We condition souls. So we'll read today's verse, Srimad Bhagavatam also. Incarnation of Krishna appeared in this age of Kali to give us light in this dark age of Kali. Today we're reading text 39, please repeat. Dharma yatra takamocha. Prajanandong itang yashaha. Lokavishoka viraja. Yana kevalino viduhu. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So up to this point, of course, the Narada Muni has just arrived on the scene and is very eager to instruct King Prachinibharhishat, who is a very pious king, who is performing all kinds of Vedic sacrifices, but is a bit over-attached to, you could say, the karmakanda process, the process of performing pious activities according to the Vedic directions to counteract other materialistic activities and to gradually gain elevation to higher plane, and so on. In the meantime, he's also, as all pious kings do, desirous of retirement, so he sent his sons off into the wilderness to perform austerities. So the Pichetas, they already covered that chapter, performing great austerities. And they went off to worship Lord Vishnu, performing austerities and penances. And of course Lord Shiva, being very pleased with their intention of worshipping Lord Vishnu and being very austere, appeared on the scene and then gave them wonderful instructions and beautiful prayers to recite. And now Narada Muni simultaneously is coming to instruct the father, King Prachinibharhishat, who is in a different situation altogether. And this is one of the subtleties, not so much a subtlety, but one of the realities of preaching, that although the message is the same, the methodology may be slightly different. I mean, Narada Muni could get straight into it with the Prachetas because they were in the situation. They were like brahmachari life and living very renounced, performing austerities, worshipping Lord Vishnu. They are ready to hear the pure message. Whereas King Prachinibharhishat was in a very different situation. He was very entangled in household life and in various types of karma kanda activities. So Narada Muni took a slightly different approach. And he begins to tell this story now. And you probably are familiar with this story. It's the story of who? King Paranjan, or who else could we say? Story of me. The story of us, basically speaking. He's talking about us. You know, I mean, you've been through these verses and you've seen how Paranjan is the enjoyer within the body. Literally. All of us. Even right now. As we wander around looking for something tasty to eat, somebody to talk to, something to do, something to look at, the tendency is still there. Enjoy. It's the nature of the soul, it's just a matter of the direction. In this world, that jiva is misdirecting that tendency to be, let's say, to be happy, to be satisfied towards the material energy. And thus becomes entangled, as Paranjan does, searching throughout the universe for sense enjoyment, for satisfaction of his unending senses. And there's a whole analogy there, of course, of the intelligence and so on and so forth. We haven't got time to get into it. But he comes across a beautiful woman, in one sense representing her intelligence. Intelligence is going for that beauty. And in this way he starts to become attached. And now he's already made his little proposal, and the woman is now replying. So today is one of those answers, or let's say, responses of the woman, or the intelligence, which is telling us, you can enjoy in this material world. Don't surrender to Krishna. Don't become a renunciate. Don't become serious. Take it easy. Enjoy yourself while you can. You're still young. You can do that later. It's not your nature. On and on and on the intelligence will go, giving us wonderful alternatives. It's prasadam. Eat a little bit more. Pizza. Cake. Sweets. Ice cream. She's a devotee. What's wrong? It's on and on and on. The intelligence is very tricky. Listening to the mind. So the woman, who's like her intelligence, is speaking here. Don't get it wrong. Man or woman, it's the same thing, basically. We're all misled. It's a representative example. In this material world, she says, in this material world, a householder's life brings all kinds of happiness in religion, economic development, sense gratification, and the begetting of children, sons and grandsons. After that, one may desire liberation as well as material reputation. The householder can appreciate the results of sacrifices, which enable him to gain promotion to superior planetary systems. All this material happiness is practically unknown to the transcendentalists. They cannot even imagine such happiness. Whew. We don't know what we're missing. Well, maybe we do. If we don't, we might be in trouble. And there's so many examples Prabhupada gives in this regard. But this is the trick of Maya, tricking us. There's so much pleasure. The Prabhupada tells the story of the little laddu. You don't have it, you wonder, maybe I should have it. And when you've got it, of course you can't stop eating it. And eventually you just wish you never had it. But what to do in this material world? According to Vedic instructions, there are two paths for human activity. Two paths. Human activity. What are those two paths? Yes, Pravritti Marga, path. Pravritti and nivritti. These are the two paths recommended in human society. The basic principle for either of those paths, or these paths, is, some of you have got the book, so don't. If you've got the book, don't answer. What is the basic principle of both paths? You could answer many things, but it's basically it's religious life. Religious life meaning more than just the faith, but at the actual, let's say, dharma. Real dharma, word is mentioned here. Real religion. Real religion, dharma, is coming from Krishna, of course, and our real religion is service. Service to teach us how to serve Krishna, ultimately. In animal life, there is only pravritti marg. Pravritti marg means sense enjoyment, and nivritti marg means spiritual advancement. In the life of animals and demons, there is no conception of nivritti marg. Nor is there any actual conception of pravritti marg. Not the real conception anyway, because it's devoid of real religious life. Pravritti marg maintains that even though one has the propensity for sense gratification, he can gratify his senses according to the direction of the Vedic injunctions. Sometimes people are called karmis, but actually that's a compliment. Sometimes people get upset when they're called karmi or something. Actually, that's a compliment, because that means somebody, if you take it literally, somebody who is materially attached but is at least following the Vedic direction of material life. Whereas very few people are. Practically everyone's a vikarmi. They're not following. So Prabhupada says here they have no conception of this pravritti marg, because pravritti marg is a path which has directed by religious practice. It's not just for those who want sense gratification. It's for those who are attached, and to help them to gradually, by a process of purification, to become detached and to become attached to Krishna, ultimately, to become free of material entanglement, karma bandhana. For example, Prabhupada says, everyone has the propensity for the three-letter word. What is it? Hari Bol, very good. That should be a real propensity. What is that? The propensity for what? Nobody knows. Too embarrassed? What is that three-letter word that everyone has the propensity for? Don't be shy. Prabhupada mentioned this word maybe tens of thousands of times in his purports. Perhaps more than any other word other than Krishna, practically. It's either Krishna or what? Huh? Sex. You have a choice. Sex or Krishna, which do you want? Of course there's sex in the spiritual world, that's another thing. Prabhupada said that one time. Don't worry, there's sex in the spiritual world. Not quite like the one in this one. Real sex. So, what do you want? We have to make our choice. It's basically one or the other. Sex doesn't just mean the actual act of sexual intercourse or activities very close to it. In one sense, it's the very kind of like existence of the soul. It's just a matter of how we interpret it. The very idea of seeing oneself as the enjoyer of in any way whatsoever, in one sense, can be called sex life. Because Krishna is the enjoyer. And only when we're connected to Krishna can we truly say that we can really enjoy. But in this material world, where we're conscious-wise, we're separate from Krishna, we think of ourselves as the enjoyer. Whether it's for the opposite sex, the same sex, or some object of the material world or whatever it is a form of sex life, basically speaking. So it's a very broad topic. The whole Vedic system is not just, of course Prabhupada said many times that sex life is, the greatest impediment to our spiritual advancement. A very great impediment. And the whole society is to restrict and eventually stop sex life. As we heard from Raj the other day, the purpose is to stop it. One time when Prabhupada was talking to Hayagriva about getting married, and he was explaining the rules of Grihastha life, that you have sex only for having a child. So, and that's only once a month. And as soon as the wife is pregnant, full stop. Until about 6 or 7 months after childbirth. Whew, Hayagriva said, wow, that's like 15, maybe 12 months or whatever, 14 months or something. He said, listen, you may as well just forget about it. Prabhupada said, yes, you have understood. But mostly we can't just forget about it, we know that. It's not as easy as that. So there's a whole process of trying, and we know how hard it is, of trying to actually get free of this desire, this itch, as Prahlad Maharaj describes it as an itch, itching sensation. And the tendency is to release it. But we all know that it's like Prabhupada describes, or Bhagavad Gita describes, how it is just like a fire, blazing fire. And you scratch it. You pour a little paraffin or oil on the fire. Immediately, it may go down a little bit. But after a few seconds, it burns even more. Raging fire, never satisfied. This is the nature of the material sense gratification, particularly sex life. Never satisfied, even up to the point of death. Prabhupada describes when he was in Paris, 80-year-old man, he saw them going into the naked lady clubs in Paris. It never goes away. There's so many examples of that. Never go. Even that story is there, that King, what's his name? I'm the king. And his minister took him in to show that this sex desire never goes away, even up to the point of death. And he showed him. This old man was dying, and he told this king, you bring your beautiful daughter with you when we go to see him. And when they went to see that old man, the old man was there, the priest was there, the wife was there, the family were there. They're all trying to, keep him alive, keep him going. But as soon as that old man saw that beautiful young princess, his eyes immediately went in her direction, and he died. This is material life. It never, you see old men sitting in the park gawking sometimes. They can't do much about it except for look. It's miserable life. What a waste of human life. It's not kamasya nendriya pratiyalabo jivete yavata jivasya tattva jignasa nantyes choy karmabhi. It's not the purpose of human life. Human life is meant for jivasya tattva jignas. The whole society is developed for this purpose. Vana ashram is meant to help us to realize. Now, Varnashram isn't a system to facilitate our material propensities. That's there, but that's not the purpose of it. The purpose is to free us of them. The purpose of Varnashram is to get out of this material world, to bring it to an end, not to make it comfortable. In the process, Praviti Marg, so-called comfort is there. But the ultimate purpose is to get out, get free, whether we're a man or woman, whatever we are, all the ashrams, all the varnas, is to act in such a way as to release us from the prison, not to make the prison comfortable. For example, according to Vedic culture, sex is enjoyed under Vedic instructions. Thus the Vedas give direction to civilized human beings to enable them to satisfy their propensities for sense gratification. And in a way that they can gradually become regulated and detached. In the Nivritti Marg, however, on the path of transcendental realization, sex is completely forbidden. The social orders are divided into four parts: brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. And only in the household of life can the pravritti marg be encouraged or accepted according to Vedic instruction. In the orders of brahmachari, vanaprastha, and sannyas, there are no facilities for sex. In this verse, the woman is advocating pravritti marg only and is discouraging the path of nivritti marg. She clearly says that the yatis, the transcendentalists who are concerned only with spiritual life, kaivalya, cannot imagine the happiness of pravritti marg. In other words, the man who follows the Vedic principles enjoys the materialistic way of life, not only by becoming happy in this life, but also in the next life by being promoted to the heavenly planets. In this life, such a person gets all kinds of material opulences, such as sons and grandsons, because he is always engaged in various religious functions. The material distresses are birth, old age, disease, and death. But those who are interested in pravritti marg hold various religious functions at the time of birth, old age, disease, and death. Without caring for the distresses of birth, old age, disease, and death, they are addicted to performing the special functions according to the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies. And this way they think, you know, they don't worry, they're not so worried. Think it's all very nice. You're going to go up to heaven, you pinda this, that, the other, to elevate the souls up, and so many different things. It's all there in the Vedic literatures, but that's not the ultimate goal. Krishna Draigunya Vishayaveda Nistraigunya Bhavajana. Krishna says, rise above these three modes. The Vedas mainly deal with the three modes of nature, Arjuna. Rise above them, be transcendental. Because they may be pious, but there's every risk on the royal road there will be an accident. So there's every risk of falling down, just like Prachinibharishat, becomes overly attached, overly dependent, and so on. Completely identifying with it. And they think that's the goal of life. But it's not the goal of life. It's very entangling. So we have to be very, very careful. Even I remember when I used to read the Bible, sometimes people get on our cases about being fanatics or something, but you see, in the Bible, it's much heavier than even Prabhupada's books. Much heavier on sex life, on, you know, entanglement and so on. Many places. I mean, one time, Jesus Christ, for instance, he was calling one person to come and join him, and the person said, "Yes, I would join you, but my father has just died. I have to deal with his, you know, death rites naturally." Jesus said, "Let the dead bury the dead. If you want to come with me, come now. Let the dead, if you want life, come with me." So most people don't know what life is. They have no idea. We also forget. Completely on the body platform. Completely on the body platform. Totally forgetting what the purpose of our being here is sometimes. We're not here to enjoy our senses. We're here to engage our senses in Krishna's service and to develop pure devotional service. We're here to get free of this material entanglement, to transcend this bodily identification of life. Sometimes we forget also. All material world is, they say, what do they say? Love makes the world go round. What is that love? It's lust. It's lust. And lust is the all-devouring sinful enemy of the world. All-devouring. Krishna gives clues how to overcome that in the third chapter of Gita, if you read it. How to overcome that lust, which is really the all-devouring sinful enemy. We've already mentioned that. It's just seeing oneself in the center, seeing oneself as the enjoyer. That's all. Everything else comes from that. Everything develops. And of course, naturally, sex life, the whole Bible, what they call the Bible, Adam and Eve and all this, everything develops from there. The forbidden apple. Everyone's got an apple nowadays. Apple Mac, apple this, apple that. Be careful. Be very careful. Yes. You've got it. Be very careful with your Apple Macs. All these things are very dangerous. Association. Becoming attached. Name. Well, sex life also, I mean, Prabhupada emphasizes in many, but we don't have time to read it. We could read millions of quotes. Wonderful quotes to help solidify our understanding. You read the second canto, it's full full of quotes on, you know, the pitfalls in spiritual life, the dangers to look out for. Very dangerous. Just like this first and second canto, we're on the fourth canto. Prabhupada has given us this license to move on. But for those who are not free of the desire for sex life, they're not supposed to go beyond the second canto. Prabhupada talks a lot about jumping to the tenth canto and trying to enter into the leelas of Krishna. We're in Vrindavan. So of course hearing about these from the right source in the right way is very purifying. We have to be very careful. Very careful. Because it's a great offense and a great impediment to spiritual life if prematurely we try to hear about these things. It can be a great impediment, not an aid. It can be an aid if we hear in the right way from the right person. Prabhupada has given us Krishna book. In the right way, if we hear it submissively, we can become purified of sex desire. This is in the second canto also. Sukadeva Goswami recommends, after describing how, you know, the difference between the two nomenclatures between the Grihastha and the Grihamedi. And you know how the Grihamedi is very attached to sense gratification and so on and so forth. That the only remedial measure to all of this is to hear and chant about Krishna from the right source. But it's very dangerous if we're not actually prepared and ready. Just like King Prachinibharishat, he had to, but the soil has to be ready. Has to be ready to hear that subject matter. Otherwise we can't understand or hear, we get the wrong impression. So we don't preach these things in the public. Prabhupada never discussed these intimate things in public. Even Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj was one time chided about heavy preaching. Sometimes also they will say, why are you always getting this heavy preaching, blah, blah, blah. Bhakti Siddhanta Maharaj described that that is more important for those who are still attached to this material world, to preach in this indirect, or you can say negative preaching, condemning material sense gratification in of itself, and so on, like that, along those lines. It's more important for those who are materially attached, rather than talking about lila. And he said, for those who are at that stage, then they should concentrate on studying the first two cantos of Bhagavatam. And to get the foundation, even Prabhupada emphasizes many times, we have to go through step by step by step, not jumping, like monkey. We have to go through it step by step, carefully understanding. And sex life is like, you know, the thing which holds us back in this material world. It's so heavy. Although the Grihastha desires... Factually, however, Praviti Marga is based on sex life. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, Yanmaitunadi Grihamedi Sukhamitucham. This is the itching verse. A householder who is too much addicted to Praviti Marga is actually called a Grihamedi, not a Grihastha. So we'll leave it up to you to understand what we are. Although the Grihastha desires sense gratification, he acts according to Vedic instructions. The Grihamedi, however, who is interested only in sense gratification, does not follow any Vedic instruction. The Grihamedi engages himself as an advocate of sex life and also allows his sons and daughters to engage in sex and to be deprived of any glorious end in life. A Grihastha enjoys sex life in this life as well as in the next, but a Grihamedi does not know what the next life is about because he is simply interested in sex in this life. Completely ignorant of future. On the whole, when one is too much inclined towards sex, he does not care for the transcendental spiritual life. In this age of Kali especially, no one is interested in spiritual advancement. Even though it is sometimes found that one may be interested in spiritual advancement, he's most likely to accept a bogus method of spiritual life, being misguided by so many pretenders. End of purport by Srila Prabhupada. This is the unfortunate situation in the age of Kali. There's no Varnashram system in terms of its proper organization. There's no environmental situation. We're brought up, at least in the West and now in the East also, we're practically exposed to sex life from more or less the beginning of life. Sex is a common part of every single television program. Advertisements carry sex life practically everywhere. The internet's full of it. Devotees get entangled in these things. I know so many devotees, with all due respect and honesty, who get caught up in these terrible places, keep it covered over, hiding it. All these things are going on. It's a very difficult age. And, you know, sometimes these are almost forbidden topics. Prabhupada actually did describe one, I don't know exactly where, but I remember describing we should discuss these things threadbare. Not in public so much, but amongst those who are svajati, similar condition, stage of advancement in spiritual life, how to deal with it. Those who have a similar nature. How to deal with it. We've all got the same problem. It's not me, you, or anyone else. Every living entity in the universe has got this problem, up to Brahma and Shiva. Bhagavatam describes only Narayana Rishi are actually free of this challenge. It's the basic challenge. And it's not just sex. Pride, distinction, adoration are subtle sex, full on. Full on. Worse, practically, than gross sex. They're more difficult to detect, and they can even be justified in the name of devotional service. Yeah, it's there, it just pervades everything. So these things have to be discussed very carefully. We don't have time today. In any case, this is an open forum. What we can do, however, I don't know what the time is, it's covered by the transcendental beauty of this temple. Night, the Griha Medhi, night has sex life. The day is busy getting money. It's their lives, sex and money. What else is there? Eat, get a big fat stomach. Enjoy, have sex, get money. What else is there in this world? Do some pious activity to try to get free of the reactions for it all. And carry on. And know what to do. Prabhupada has given us the solution. We sometimes don't take it, but he's given us the medicine. Lord Chaitanya has given us the medicine. Nityo Shadimaya Nashi Baralagi. Harinama Mahamantra. Lotumi Magi. He's given us this medicine to cure this disease. That's Harinam, chanting the holy name. But there's many other things too. What can we do? I don't know. We probably have to finish now already. We haven't started. Just setting not even the foundation. This is a topic ongoing and it's very important. It's not just something we browse over, it's something we don't want to talk about. It's one of the biggest problems in our society. We cover things over as if everything's fine and okay. But it's not. This thing's got to be dealt with, otherwise we're not making any progress. No progress. And there's constant quarreling, quibbling, thinking we can spread Krishna consciousness by material intellect, that's another foolishness. By material wealth, this, that, the other. These things can be used, of course they're meant to be used. But they don't spread Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness forces purity. Purity means becoming free of sex desire. Without that we can make no progress. These are very important topics. Very deep subject, and I request you all please to take it seriously. It doesn't matter whether a man or woman, grihastha or brahmachari, it's the same thing for all of us. Sannyasi, everyone's got the same opportunity. Got the same opportunity to go forward or backwards, whichever we choose. Everything's there. No one is condemned. Everyone has there's a direction or let's say a medicine for everybody. It may not be exactly the same in its degrees or in its quantity, but it's the same medicine, devotional service. What else can we do? Just a few quickies before we sign off. What else can we do to help? Maybe we're too shy to talk about it, but some may have some suggestions. How to assist other devotees, to assist ourselves, maybe we become a little bit more useful to Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas to spread Krishna consciousness? What can we do? Any suggestions? You can read the Srimad Bhagavatam, that's a good idea. Let me see if I've got some notes on this. Well, you've come to the Holy Dham, that's a good idea. Coming to the Holy Dham is a very good idea. The temple's also a Holy Dham. But don't come here for sense gratification. I mean, obviously, we're all at different stages, but don't encourage yourself, at least. If others are doing it, that's another thing. But don't encourage yourself to make this a social scene, Peyton Place, Coronation Street, or whatever you call it. It's not. Take advantage of being here, to hear and chant seriously. Don't waste time gossiping, just hanging around. Take full advantage of this great opportunity. What else can we do? What is this? Huh? Yeah, we can do kirtan together. Just come together and chant together. This cures us of the sex desire. Worship the deity. When Prabhupada was discussing, I don't know, he wrote a letter, I don't know who it is to, maybe Hayagriva again. He was saying, Mr. Lust, Krishna is stronger than Mr. Lust, or Mr. Lust's father, or grandfather, or great-grandfather. He's much stronger. Getting married is not the solution, by the way, he said. That's not the solution. We have to take shelter of Krishna, not wife or husband. Don't expect your wife or husband to do it. Maybe you're lucky, but that doesn't always work. And don't expect your child to do it after you husband and wife have failed. Oh, my child will deliver me. That may not work either. We got to do our work. Don't depend on others' mercy. Take it on board. Become serious. Depend upon Krishna. Prabhupada said you have to take to deity worship if Mr. Lust is strong. Other times he said many other things. For instance, he said, just like Haridas Thakur, he was tempted by the prostitute, even by Maya Devi. Haridas Thakur just kept chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, 24 hours a day. Prabhupada said, what is the difficulty? Just chant 24 hours a day. No problems, no sex life, no time. So follow in the footsteps, pray to Haridas Thakur. In the Bhagavatam also it is said you can pray. You pray to the four Kumaras. This is a nice verse. I don't know the verse, I just know of it. The verse where you pray to the four Kumaras to please protect me from sex desire. They're there to help us. We can't do it on our own. The Lord is here. We take shelter of Him. We pray to Him. This is an opportunity. Take as an opportunity to surrender to Krishna. The material energy is very strong. We cannot overcome. Those who surrender unto me can cross beyond. Because why? Because Krishna picks us up. He picks us up. Only He can protect us from this if we want. We have to call to Him. We have to cry to Him for help. Like a child in danger, it cries to the parents. Cries. We have to take shelter of Krishna. Of the holy name. Keep taking shelter. Sex life is always there in the material world. Of course, we try to tolerate, try to control, and so on and so forth. But the temptation is always there. What else can we do? Turn the page the right way around. It becomes easier. What else can we do? Read Prabhupada's books. That's very good. Study Prabhupada's books. Our intelligence becomes clear by reading Prabhupada's books. It's due to a foggy intelligence that we become overwhelmed. And if you don't read Prabhupada's books with the right attitude, you don't read them with, an ulterior motive to find all the things that you want to find to justify your diversion or something, but just submissively hear from Prabhupada, this will purify our intelligence. When intelligence becomes stronger, it won't be so subjected to the mind's demands. It won't be so much under the control of the objects or the senses and so on. What else can we do? I don't know what happened to that piece of paper. It's not here. What else can we do? Association is very, very, very important. Both sides. We've heard a bit about the negative association. I mean, Mahat Sevan Dwarma Hurvi Mukte Tamo Dwaram Yoshitam Sanghi Sangam. That, you know, it's so important, the association of Mahat Sevan with the great devotees. That opens the door. Tamo Dwaram, excuse me, Mahat Sevan Dwarma Hurvi Mukte, to freedom. And so it's proper association. But if we associate with those who are too attached to sex life, or diversity, see, Bhagavatam is spoken to women, to men. It's spoken to all men. There are no women there. So sometimes we hear all these verses, blah, 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 about ladies and women, whatever. But 18,000 verses, 17,950 are smashed towards the men. Because they're supposed to guide society. They're supposed to know about the dangers of loose association or becoming attached to women. Because we're all trying to become Vaishnavas, so we have to understand it all. But it's not like, you know, every verse is full of direction for human society, but specifically for the men, for the cultured people in society. It's meant for understanding what is the goal of human life. So men who are too attached to women are practically worst association. Of course, we don't be offensive, but we have to be very, very careful and know how to associate. Or with the opposite sex, very careful. Extremely careful. Otherwise, the mind just takes our intelligence away and we're a goner. What else can we do? So good, that's one thing on the association. Getting good association, constantly reminding us, guiding us, engaging us, purifying us, and so on. And on the other side, avoiding the negative association. Lord Kapiladeva describes how every learned man knows that the greatest entanglement in this material world is one's attachment for sense gratification. But when that same attachment is directed towards the self-realized souls, it's the cause of freedom in this world. Releases us. The association of great devotees frees us from the pernicious effects of material association. So it's a very important thing, proper association. That's what Prabhupada wanted, to create a society with good association. What else can we, what else on the negative side? I see we've already discussed on the positive side also a little bit. What else can we do? Pardon? Sorry? Yeah, we've already said Mahat Sevan. That means service. Association, service, they go hand in hand. It means the same thing. Pardon? Huh? Pray? Yeah, we mentioned prayer. Pardon? Pray is very important. Always prayerful. Always in this prayerful mood when we're chanting Hare Krishna. You know, always be humble. Being humble. Don't be proud. Always depend on the holy name. Have faith in the holy name. Have faith in Bhagavatam. Have faith in the devotees. We have to have this dependence. Dependence. What else? Fall down? What was that? Pardon? Control. Thank you. My hearing is not very good, I'm afraid. Controlling the tongue. Yes, by two ways. Chanting always. Keep chanting. Don't let it stop. And on the other side, only take prasadam. But again, we have to be careful. There are times when one devotee wrote a letter to Prabhupada about this and said they're having a problem with sex. And Prabhupada actually wrote back telling them to eat very simply and to stop eating sugar. And another time he said, don't eat late at night. Another time he said, stop eating all these nasty spices, especially this mustard seed, he said. Very irritating spice. He personally said that in a conversation. I think it was in Denver or Detroit or somewhere on a morning walk. He said, this spice is very irritating. Spicy food. I know for Indian people that means death. May as well die. But in general, I mean, in different people, everyone was an individual, so you have to take, you know, what is relevant. It's not that you do everything. They're in different stages, so sometimes this is more about. But these are different things. Yes, controlling, regulate, at least regulate your eating. Just regulate it and only take prasadam. That's the first rule. Only prasadam. Do not eat food which is not offered to Krishna. Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj and Prabhupada also described, your mind will become wicked if you eat food not offered to Krishna. It will become wicked. Only food offered to Krishna. So if you're attached to chocolates, I don't know who you on earth you offer them to, but be careful. Because I don't know if you can offer that to Krishna or not. Whatever it is, make sure that food is offered to Krishna, prasadam only. And of course the consciousness also of the offering. So controlling the tongue and what we speak is very important. Don't offend, don't speak nonsense, and so on. Fault-finding, criticism, all this is a form of sex life. Criticizing, fault-finding is another kind of sex life, that's all. Nothing more than that. Unless, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj Prabhupada also said, unless you, by your talking, you can help that person, don't talk. Shut up. Keep your stool to yourself. No point doing, no point talking about the faults of others unless we can do something to help them. And that should be our consciousness, etc. What else is there? Pardon? Pardon? Yeah, that we've mentioned it in the beginning, practically speaking, but definitely hearing it from the right source, the right subject matter about Krishna or devotional service is very purifying. Being grave about self, yeah, being grave. Being, you can say, self-composed or grave, and that may require a little bit of association or reminders and so on and so forth. Environmental things are very important. The environment. Of course, Varna Ashram, Prabhupada has described any society that does not establish Varna Ashram is an animal society. No better than animal society. He writes that in purports in several places. Is also, so that's part of the environment. Being properly situated is very important, as much as one can be in Kali Yuga, in one's occupation, one's ashram, and so on. Don't imitate, don't try to, you know, be a cheat. Try to actually, you know, accept the situation and act accordingly, although you'll have no spiritual strength. So those material, it's helpful, it's a foundation. The same thing with what we're doing, same thing with the environment we're in, the atmosphere that we're in should be favorable as much as possible for cultivating Krishna consciousness and not irritating the sex impulse. So like pictures, the books we read, the pictures we... Watching television, terrible vision, terrible thing. Watch, be very, very careful. Be very careful. You know, I mean, the whole thing is based on sex, practically speaking. I don't want to be a sex maniac or something, but behind it all is the broader understanding of sex. Everything. Becoming attracted to this. You know, it's alright to see the beauty of this material, but we've got to see it in relationship with Krishna, not separately. Otherwise that's another form of sex life. You can go on and on and on and on and on. So many things. Cleanliness. Keeping clean. Very important. Being regulated. Very important. Krishna himself describes this in the Bhagavad Gita, attachment, the detachment and regulation as being two paths to try to help deal with this restless mind and so on. So many things. And the way we dress, just like ladies, why Prabhupada wants the ladies to cover their hair and to dress a little chastely is so that it doesn't irritate the sex desire. And if you don't care for that, what can you say? That means we're not really trying to please Prabhupada, those who are followers. Obviously not everyone here is following that. May not, sure, it's their choice, you know. But those who are serious about it will do that. And the men also, behaving in such a way as it doesn't irritate the ladies. It's, you know, it's, you have to be a little bit conscious. Grave, it could be said to be. Word. Anything else? I don't know what happened to that piece of paper. Oh, here it is. Okay, we'll just run through a few more before we close shop. If there are any more. Of course, we've got to get blessings. We have to be honest. We have to discuss confidentially with the right persons. diet, I think, was already mentioned. Cleanliness regulation. Putting Krishna in the center is really the key, I suppose you could say, always. Instead of putting ourselves in the center, which is what sex is, putting Krishna in the center. Putting Krishna in the center. Constantly trying to remember Krishna. The Bhagavad Gita recommends that when these thoughts come up, that we cut them out right from the very beginning. Armed with yoga, stand and fight the doubts. That's another chapter. But but with spiritual strength, we should conquer over this insatiable enemy in the form of lust. You have to have spiritual strength. Come to Mangal Arati, chant japa, attend Srimad Bhagavatam class. This gives us spiritual strength. Association with Prabhupada. Separation of the sexes, of course, it's not entirely possible, but to as much degree as practically as possible, is a very important issue. In many of the great societies of the past, in Europe, particularly the Spartans, even in the beginning of the Romans, these powerful races, they had very strict sex separation. The wife, husband would only see each other on occasion. They would never sleep together unless they wanted to have a child. The whole Roman Empire collapsed because of sex desire, basically. As soon as they became too licentious, it collapsed. This is where the whole world is weakened because of too much sex. And we're weak also because of mental and physical sex. It has to be controlled. Semen itself is the most powerful substance. And all the ancients knew that. They knew how powerful that was. And to lose it is a great loss. Great loss. That's another subject. Chant very carefully. Anudinam. We have to chant. What's that verse? Nectar of instruction. We have to chant regularly and carefully. Kirtan. Pretty much. Some subject matters are there. I'm sure there are many others. But please bear this in mind and don't hide it. Find someone confidential to discuss these topics with, if necessary, with the mood of what am I going to do, what to do about it. Don't just carry on as if nothing's happened. We've seen so many times in our movement this goes on, you know, like blindfolded, you're going to fall over. It's not something to be publicly declared. Everyone has the same problem in different ways, but it's something that needs to be addressed. Something that needs to be discussed in the right forum. Please don't be shy, embarrassed, or feel guilty, or feel bad, because it's nothing unusual. I've been through this for years, and so many devotees have been through it, or are going through it, or still going through it. Whatever, it's an work in progress. Until we're free from this, there's no question of liberation. Prabhupada said, if you're free of sex desire, you're already liberated. You're taking the broader understanding. So we're going to finish there. Wasn't very much of a Leela class today. I would have liked to talk on Leela, but what to do. There's a hand going up, young man. You have a question? Question? Oh. I don't think he knows about this at this point of his life. That's why the Kumaras didn't grow any older, because the urge, consciousness or awareness of it may be there, but the urge for it does not usually develop until a certain age, although in Kali Yuga it may be getting younger and younger. But at the same time, they wanted to remain young, so they were not faced with that challenge, difficult challenge, especially for the youth, very difficult. They know all the help they can get to understand it and deal with these things. Education, forgot to mention the crux. Education is the key thing in society, educating children in these things. Not just children, we're also children, educating everybody, but especially the children, because they're open, they're ready, they can take it. Their minds are blank, they're like clean slates almost. In fact, I remember one time in America, in Kansas City, it was an interesting thing happened. That's Kansas City. Kansas City. And in Kansas City one time, it was the United States Education Department, established a course which must be taught in all schools at a certain age. And this course was a course on safe sex. Was it on safe sex? It wasn't like, it meant, in other words, the children will have sex, but how to have safe sex. That was the course. So they didn't get AIDS. Like today, you know, everyone uses contraceptives. So I hope the boys are not doing these things. I don't know how they get away with it if they're not. Because the standard is pretty high. But anyway, mostly in the whole world, they're using contraceptives, and there's abortions every day. About 200,000 abortions take place on the planet. It's incredible. Some women have 4, 5, 6 abortions in their life, and it's just accepted as normal. The governments in some places even push it. These things are going on. So in America, we just kind of anything goes practically. And they were putting this course forward for safe sex, and it had to be taught. One headmistress in Kansas City said, "I will not teach this course. If you don't teach it, you'll be sacked." She said, "You can sack me, you can do what you like, but I'm not going to allow it to be taught in my school." "Why?" And she said, "Because there's no mention in this course of no sex. If you don't introduce, you know, an aspect in this course that a child does not have to have sex, they can actually live without sex, I will not teach it." And she won the court case. So they had to introduce that there is a possibility that a child can live without sex. It's possible. And that might be the best solution to all the problems. But without a higher taste, without proper education, without environmental support, it's all very difficult. We have to try to create a society where this is more easier for people and for ourselves to begin with, and on like that. Hare Krishna. Any questions? Hands are going up. Yes. Mike. Excuse me, my voice has been a bit down recently. I don't know if there is a mic. You can shout. I think Mike left. Oh, here he goes.
Maharaj, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that karma kando, jnana kando, kevalo vishero bhando, amrita boliya jeva khaye, nanajani brahman kare, akadarja bhakkan kare, tarajanam adavate jaye. And also he gives another statement.
We'll go back off there. Not everybody is a Sanskrit scholar. Can you speak in English?
So the meaning, this is not Sanskrit, this is Bengali.
Whatever it is, speak in English.
Yeah, so he says that karma kanda, he has been compared this karma kanda and gyan kanda to
poisonous pots.
Poisonous pots, yeah, exactly. And if anyone eats this by thinking that this is nectar, then he has to go through this through birth, death, old age and ages for a long time. And he gives another statement that karma kanda and gyan kanda is like cheater. Has been compared karma and jnana. Jnana karma is like a cheater, and he throws into the deep ocean of material existence. And Srila Rupa Goswami says that jnana karmadi anabritam means without devoid of jnana and karma. And Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, bahunam jarmanamante jnana vanam prapadhanta. So these four different statements are completely contradictory with each other.
Contradictory? I don't see anything contradictory.
He says that those are jnanis, they surrender unto me. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that jnana and karma has been compared to poisonous pot. So I see.
Yeah, well, again, it's sort of along the same lines. I mean, jnana and karma, kanda, are both there in the Vedic literatures. They have their part to play. But unless they come into contact with devotional service, then where's the gain? Where's the gain? Even in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes there, as he began, how one can come to transcendental knowledge, but all kinds of different paths are recommended. But unless they come to the path of devotional service, they're considered to remain on the material platform. So unless the jnani comes in contact with the bhakti or with devotional service or the karmi, then they remain on that platform, and that thus they will not develop in of themselves, they will not lead to devotional service. But if after many, many births, and it's not easy, such a great soul is very rare, after many, many births, if such a jnani who's pursuing that path of whatever it is, study the scriptures, liberation, whatever he's after, comes in contact with the devotees of the Lord and actually accepts the path of bhakti, then that's all right. The jnana itself isn't wrong. Bhagavad Gita starts with jnana. It's just what we do with it. So if they understand that the purpose of knowledge is to understand Krishna, if the purpose of karma is to serve Krishna, then gradually that can purify us of the other objectives of karma, which is heavenly delights or jnana of liberation. It can purify us of that, and one can actually advance to the higher stage of devotional service. In of itself is of no use, like everything is no use unless it's connected to Krishna. It's useless. Everything, all the talents we have, all the wealth we have, everything we have, unless connected to Krishna, is a zero. But when connected to Krishna, becomes valuable. So if those jnanis are connected to Krishna, then their knowledge, like Prabhupada did, he used science, those who were attached to science, he used that in Krishna's service. Those who have knowledge of the Shastras, if you be like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, I mean, he was, in one sense, he was a kind of a jnani, but he surrendered to Lord Chaitanya, and you know, greatly useful. So many people surrender because he was a very learned scholar. Though someone who's a materialistic person, maybe you can take George Harrison, he didn't completely surrender, you could say. But he brought so many people to Krishna consciousness because he used in his materialistic activities, he introduced Krishna. So those people who adored him, they also became connected with Krishna to some degree, many of them very much so. Many became devotees. So in this way, everything can be connected, but it's not because of jnana and karma. It's by the fact that one takes an association, one gets the mercy of a Vaishnava. Someone other one gets the mercy of a devotee, one may become a devotee. So they, by the mercy of Bhakti Devi, they may also come to devotional service. I mean, they're connected to the Vedas, at least that's there, so there's a good chance that they'll get the opportunity to at least come into contact with Bhakti Devi. Because they're connected to the Vedas. They're connected to the system given by Krishna somewhere along the line. There's a good chance that if they're actually a little bit that way inclined, that they'll get that opportunity in due course of time, as the four Kumaras did. They got that opportunity. They were Brahmavadis, they were on the path of jnana, but they got the opportunity to associate with Bhakti Devi, and they took it, and then they were transformed. So it can be like that. Not a contradiction, it's just whether it's on its own or whether it's connected to Bhakti or not, my understanding. Hare Krishna. Anything else? Yes, Paul. Nick.
Hare Krishna. You discussed maybe 10-15 points about how to control sex desire, which can help. And since you discussed this so elaborately, I would like to ask, in your personal life, I don't know your previous ashram, Brahmacharya or Krista, whatever, what helped you most in fighting against sex desire?
Sex desire. I mean, I've been through a lot of ups and downs in this regards. As a young person, brought up in the Western world, of course, it wasn't exactly the most religious upbringing, to say the least, without getting into the details. We were hippies. And basically every day was another party, another this and that. It was pretty, materialistically speaking, hellish, or a very sinful lifestyle. So those conditionings, let's say this, they can be very strong. So coming to Krishna consciousness movement, the first 4 years were like plain sailing. I couldn't understand. It was like a miracle. I thought it was all over. I thought that was it. I thought we were free. It was quite amazing. Due to the association of Srila Prabhupada and the devotees, everything became very easy. Very easy. We were fully engaged in devotional service. We were very enthusiastic. We were very determined and very respectful. Practically speaking, there was no... thought that disturbances would come, I'll tell you honestly. I'm exactly what happened, whether it was because deep down in our subconscious those subtle desires are still there in their various forms, whether it's pride or whatever it may be. subtle attachments are there. After about 4 or 5 years, suddenly I found, challenges which I didn't think were going to come up again. Thought we were over the hurdle, but and then for many years it was a secret battle going on. Thought, or just a passing cloud in the sky. But when I realized it was more than that, I tried to discuss it with some devotees. It backfired. In those days, it was like almost an offense to discuss these things. You were practically labeled as a demon, and so on and so forth. So it kind of backfired. It was a rather depressing experience, and which caused some forms of depression, and so on and so forth. Which went through ups and downs for many years, wondering what to do, determination, carrying on, heck of a lot of prayer, heck of a lot of prayer, a heck of a lot of tears and prayers, and you could say pain, which I don't think you necessarily have to go through, for many, many years. Eventually decided to get married, got married for quite some time, tremendous amount of experience from being married, and realizations and so on. Everything has its different course of events. We're all individuals. Krishna deals with us individually. Krishna is there, and he's always there. If you always remember, Krishna is always with you through all these ups and downs and difficulties. Nothing is happening completely as if it's separate from Krishna. Somehow or another, he's always there. And what we're going through, if we remember Krishna in that picture, can give us strength and realizations and help us to keep moving forward in so many different ways. And it's really the mercy of Srila Prabhupada is the only thing I can really say which kept us in any way going forward and kept me in the association of devotees, because if anyone has been a sinful rogue and a whatever you want to call it, I don't know. I mean, as I say, most devotees don't really reveal their minds very much, but if anything has kept me going is because it's simply Prabhupada is unlimitedly merciful. All you got to do is cry for his mercy and be sincere. Try to be as sincere as you can. Don't be a cheat. Don't be a hypocrite. Don't be dishonest. Krishna will help. Krishna will help. Don't try to imitate. And some other things just take their course in life. And, this is Lord Chaitanya's movement. He's Patita Pavana. He's the deliverer of the most fallen. And the thing which is really, I suppose, more than anything else in terms of practicality is somehow or another over the last decades is Srila Prabhupada's mercy become more and more absorbed in kirtan. More and more kirtan. More and more kirtan. Kirtan is the Yuga Dharma. Kirtan is the only saving grace the Lord's given us. He's here in the form of kirtan. So just take the kirtan. Get into kirtan. This is the only real solution to all the problems, is kirtan. And not japa, but kirtan. Japa must be there, but kirtan is the actual solution. This is the Yuga Dharma. It's kirtan. Can overcome all the ill effects of Kali Yuga. So just chant, pray. Pray and endeavor, Prabhupada said one time. Carry on, don't give up. I don't know, maybe it's my stubbornness. But through thick and thin, we just carry on. And somehow or another, whatever. Prabhupada's mercy. So there's always hope. I think that was one thing at the back of my mind. I thought, well, if Lord Chaitanya's mission can't help me, it can't help anyone. There's a bit of pride there. But I just was thinking like that. That somehow or another, don't let go. It'll happen. Dhanaj devotees let go. They might be just that far away from the edge of the forest, and then they turn back. You don't know. Krishna's mercy is there all the time, and we don't recognize it sometimes. We don't recognize it. It's always there. Everything in the form is a form of Krishna's mercy in one sense. We just have to know how to take it. Don't blame anyone. That's an important thing I realized at one time. You can easily end up blaming somebody, blaming those devotees for what they said or did. Blaming your family, blaming your karma, blaming this, blaming that, and blaming Krishna for everything. Why did he make me like this? You can do all sorts of things to miss the point of taking responsibility for your life, and just taking shelter of Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gwantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam.